Hi everyone, my name is Asif. I lead Salesforce practice at Royal Cyber. Today we are here to conduct our fourth episode of podcast series on Salesforce B2C Composable Commerce. We at Royal Cyber, we are a rich level Salesforce consulting as well as ISV partners, and we have recently been approved as one of the official implementation partners by Salesforce for Salesforce B2C Composable Commerce as well. Today is a special episode. We are actually collaborating with Salesforce, and we have one of the guest speakers from Salesforce. Formally introduce the panel. I have Buha Khalid, who's our tech lead for Salesforce B2C Composable Commerce. I have Iftikhar Khan, who is our certified Salesforce B2C Commerce Architect. The special guest speaker, which we have from Salesforce, I would say the man himself. He's been considered as one of the pioneers of Salesforce B2C headless solutions. I met him in Connections 2023. Since then, we've been very closely working with him and his team on Salesforce B2C Composable Commerce Accelerator for Royal Cyber. He has been a great mentor, inspiration to many of us. James, thank you so much for joining and taking some time out today for us. It's an honor for us to have you as part of this session.
Thank you so much. It's great to, always great to be with you guys. And thank you. And I don't think I can live up to that introduction, but I really appreciate it.
Sure, you truly deserve it.
That's very kind of you. I'm really excited to be here today, especially I'm very honored to be part of your podcast and, great to be working with Royal Cyber, of course.
So James, to start with, before we move towards Composable Commerce, I would like to start with if you can give some heads up on your role within Salesforce and your association, especially with this product or solution, which we're calling it Salesforce Composable Commerce.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. So I'm a product management director at Salesforce, and I have a global remit to work with the Composable Commerce solution. In many respects, I'm an evangelist for the product, and I work very closely with partners like yourselves and with end customers to really help explain the product and to also get feedback from customers in terms of things like things they might be wanting that we're not currently doing, or, looking at things like that. My background is I was part of a company called Mobify that Salesforce acquired about 3 years ago now. I was a solution architect at Mobify for 5 years. In that time, I was also one of the founding fathers of the Mac Alliance, being one of the five people at the table when the idea first came out. I was on the technical council for the Mac Alliance, and Mobify was one of the founding companies in there. So yeah, I've got a really strong background in Composable. And I think with Salesforce over these last 3 years, with the acquisition of Mobify, myself and also some other really, really hugely important people from Mobify, like Igor Faletsky and John Boxall and Drew Lau, have really been working with the rest of the Salesforce engineering team to change perspectives, I think, from Salesforce, as Salesforce has really adopted a composable mindset. And so that's been a lot of what our work has been. We've really kind of fast-tracked that as Salesforce have moved from their traditional solution into kind of a composable mindset as they're moving forward for the future.
Excellent. And that's where my next question is, James. What thought process or what vision Salesforce has behind this introducing of this or launching of Salesforce Composable Commerce? Because we see that started from Demandware, then Sitegenesis, SFRA, and then there was a time where Salesforce acquired Mobify. There was a launch of a headless storefront, and now Composable. So how do you take this, the thought process behind this launch?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really, really great question. I think it's often when you're potentially buying or you're a partner looking to work with the company, it's important to understand what they're trying to do, not just what you see in the market, but what they're actually trying to do. And I think, the way that we look at it is like this. We're certainly not in any way moving away from, SFRA. That's still going to be around to stay. We still have Sitegenesis customers. I think what we're doing with Salesforce is opening up the options. For me, one of the big things of composability is flexibility and options. For me, if I was a retailer buying a composable solution, I'd like to have that flexibility. And with Salesforce, the idea is that you could do SFRA, and you could use our composable storefront, or if you wanted, you could completely build your own custom front end on top of our APIs. But the great thing is you don't have to make that decision in one go. You may have multiple different business cases, each of which deserves a different type of storefront. So you can have all of these same storefronts on the same Salesforce Commerce Cloud backend. So what I might do is I might have composable storefront for my main sites around the world, maybe use SFRA for a couple of quick sites that I want to be very, very quick to spin them up really quickly, and then quick to maintain them and easy to maintain, and then use a complete custom front end for things like an in-store experience or a native app, all against exactly the same backend for Salesforce Commerce Cloud. So I think flexibility is a big part of it. And then the second thing I think we'd like to do is, one of the issues around composable for many traditional kind of composable builds is, while they're flexible, you can build anything you want, you kind of have to build everything. And so the other thing about Salesforce is giving you more out of the box, which is the idea that you can customize where you want to. You can even throw away things that we give you. But out of the box, you know, so if you wanted to throw away like our page designer and use a third-party CMS, you can do that. If you want to throw away our search, third-party search, do that. But the point is that you get these out of the box. So the areas where you're like, as a you know, retailer, you might want to really drill in and focus and say, this is the area where we differentiate. You can do that. But all the other bits, you can take them straight out of the box. So what does that do? It cuts down time to market, cuts down cost, cuts down risk, and it cuts down maintenance afterwards as well. So I think that's a big part of it. It's like, how do we make composable an easier proposition for retailers? Because in the past, I think it's been seen as very technical, very complex. And so we're trying to cut that out of it and make it as easy to go composable as it was to use Sitegenesis and SFRA.
That actually definitely makes sense. I would say, how do you see, I mean, when because you've been part of a lot of conferences, you've been, you know, meeting with the customers, partners, how it has been perceived by the customers, this new launch of Salesforce Composable Commerce Cloud?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You're absolutely right. I typically am talking to something like 10 customers or prospects every month. So I do speak to a lot of customers out in the world. I think the reactions have been very, very positive. A little bit of a surprise, I think, in the sense that I talked to a partner company just the other day, 2 days ago, and he said, this is amazing, really, really great solution. And it's funny because I still sort of think of Salesforce as a definitive monolith. And I think in many respects, one of the things that Salesforce is still trying to do is kind of change that perception. So I think people see it, they're like, wow, this is amazing. I think there's a whole bunch of things around that. For instance, not just the fact that we can do composable well, but even the fact that through fantastic SIs like yourselves, we're actually able to move much faster than people expect, and arguably more economically than people expect. So the kind of whole cost structure of everything has changed a lot. So a lot of people are still thinking of Salesforce 3 to 5 to 10 years ago. They're quite shocked to see how much we've changed in that area, I think. So I think that's the big thing. But yes, absolutely, the approach, the technology has all been received really, really well by the marketplace. So it's great to see that.
Excellent. James, how do you see the way Salesforce is actually expanding their ecosystem, the partners ecosystem they have? And then on the other side, obviously there are customers, but this ISVs are the partners which are connected with Salesforce. There are a lot of vendors whom Salesforce is already connected with, and they are presenting their solutions, their products in the form of composable and available for Salesforce customers. How do you see that partner ecosystem is growing in the next few months or few years?
Yeah, no, that's a really, really excellent question. And it's one of the big responsibilities of my role, actually, is working with that ecosystem of partners. So we can't become composable if we don't work really well with partners. I mean, that's just great. And I think, again, it's a good example of the sort of Salesforce style of composable. Yes, technically, you can integrate with anything that has an API. Absolutely. And, you know, if you have a visual component you want to integrate, it possibly already has a React integration, which integrates with our composable storefront. However, a lot of these big companies still want that peace of mind that they get for having an official connector built between, you know, built with the ISV, the third party, for their software and their technology to integrate directly with B2C. And in some cases, you know, you can understand why that is. If I take something like CMS, that's actually a fairly non-trivial integration because there's the customer-facing side of the CMS integration, which generally, if I can be technical for a second, it's basically just a React object factory. It's going to read some data from their CMS, and it's going to convert that into visual components on the screen. That's basically what it does. But if you think of the back office integration, that can be quite detailed and complex because of the back office integration you're talking about. I might have a complete CMS authoring tool, and I might want to be able to integrate with Salesforce's data so I can see things like if I'm building a PDP, product detail page, I can see those product details while I'm authoring the page. So some of those things can get quite sophisticated. So the big reason that we're building these is to A, cut down on the cost and risk of developing in the first place, but B, by building them in a productized manner, they support it. One area that you can run into a big risk with in composable is inheriting a lot of technical debt and building up technical debt over the years because of the high levels of custom code. So every time we productize this, we can keep that technical debt. We can, you know, it's another way of chipping away and reducing that technical debt. So I think the ISV is working really, really well. It's growing very rapidly, I would say. And then we're sort of growing into new categories. A lot of the first ones that joined there were very much CMS vendors and search vendors. We're now getting more, you know, slightly different categories going in there, like DAMs and DXC and people like that kind of categories. From the SI point of view, very much again, the same kind of idea, cutting down the amount of custom code that has to be written for an individual project by having SIs like yourselves build these fantastic accelerators where they're taking our storefront as a starting point They're adding new functionality and augmenting that. They're often pre-integrating third-party ISV technology solutions. And then finally, often specializing in a specific vertical or a sub-vertical. So maybe a vertical like retail or like automotive or supermarkets, or a sub-vertical even like electronics or luxury or something like that. And obviously, every time you do that, you reduce the amount of custom code that you have to write on a project. So it's all great value for money from the customer's point of view.
Tim, one more thing, which, you know, we normally experience, because when we speak with the customers, and especially this particular year, I would say the third and this fourth quarter of the year which we are in, when we speak with the customer, there's a lot of uncertainty, you know, in customers' minds, especially they don't want to spend a lot of money in one go, you know, and that's where this composable solution comes into play, right? Especially for those who are on site Genesys customers. But there are a lot of some misconceptions which are still in customers' minds, plus some doubts on this solution, some questions on this solutions. And that's where the awareness of the education, educating them is comes into play. And that's the reason we have taken this initiative to start this series of podcasts where we're trying to reach more people, more audiences, and make them aware and educate them about this composable commerce product, right? How do you see that? I mean, and especially when it comes to cost, you know, you've been speaking with the customers, with the C-level people. How do you see the cost of migrating from site, if somebody wants to migrate from site Genesys to SFRA, that cost, and the cost of migrating in a phased wise rollout or a hybrid storefront model from site Genesys to a composable?
No, fantastic question and incredibly relevant, as you rightly say. And I think the easy way to look at this is, I do think the costs of moving from site Genesys to SFRA have come down over these last few years. SIs have just managed to get a more efficient way of doing it. But I think the first thing I need to really make sure everyone understands in the audience is that you do not have to go from site Genesys to SFRA before you go to composable. You can go straight from site Genesys to composable. And there are multiple different ways of doing that. Obviously, you can just do the whole thing in one go. And in many cases, that's a lot smaller project than people often expect. So we've had that, you know, 5 months sometimes, quite small projects just to move the whole thing across like that. But I think the other area that we've been looking at, which is very relevant for this kind of economic time, is the ability to partially take the site across. Now, you mentioned doubts, and I think that, again, a really, really great point. So firstly, what am I talking about, and then why would you do it? So what we're talking about here is the idea of running part of your site on composable storefront and part of your site on site Genesys. So one of the first places to look might be the upper funnel. This is the areas where your customers are going to spend most of the time. It's where most of the traffic on the site is spending most of the time when they're looking at it. These are all pages that are typically going to be landing pages. So I'm talking about things like the homepage, search results page, product listing page, and product detail pages. So these kind of things, category landing pages maybe, but they're all the upper funnel. Typically, they're going to be landing pages. And this means that by improving the performance, improving perhaps the mobile optimization, all of these kind of things, you're going to improve SEO. So you're going to get more organic traffic. Secondly, you're going to reduce bounce rates because the site's going to be faster. It's going to be more optimized for mobile. Again, that's going to give you more people actually being on the site, coming to your site and staying on the site. So typically what we're going to see from that is improved add to cart, improved AOV for most companies. Again, we can't make promises because there are lots and lots of other factors that have come into this, but it's one of the areas. And I have to say that some of our customers are starting with nothing more than just PLP and PDP. I don't want to go into the details right this second because it's outside the scope of this call, but we use a progressive web app and a single page app for our composable storefront. One of the big benefits of those kind of user experiences is the speed that you move from one page to the next. So typically on the upper funnel, I don't like to do just a single page because you won't get that advantage. But PLP to PDP and back, it's a very common browsing trajectory through a site, and so you do see some benefits there. To your point on the question here about, like, how do you, you know, do people have doubts? I think the great thing about retail for online is the fact that we're all customers of this. So everyone knows their own experiences. So I think it's about getting that experience to the retailer making this decision. Just say, look at this site. You know, it's slow. You've already gone back. You know, the site takes too long to load. You've already gone back. This site isn't optimized for mobile. Typically, we're seeing something like 70%+ of customers coming to sites on mobile devices. So if the site isn't mobile optimized, immediately customers are turning away. Now, at the other end of the spectrum, just one last thing on this. Actually, our customers kind of educated on this. One of our customers decided that they didn't like the checkout and they wanted to just do the checkout. And I was a bit skeptical. Well, it's not a landing page, you know. But the thing is, many of these Sitegenesis customers build their checkout in the days when they were really still aiming at desktop devices. And these checkouts are multi-page experiences. Now, if you think, if I turn up on that checkout with a phone, that's a lot of friction.
Yes.
And friction is the kind of moment where the customer just looks at it and says, I can't be bothered. That's too much work. I'm going to go somewhere else where I can just do one click. So we did see with this customer that by just moving this multi-page desktop optimized checkout to a single page mobile optimized checkout, we actually saw a 30% increase in checkout conversion rate, which is, that's a lot. As much as I've been in this subject for a long time, I'm still very much about business benefit. This is not about a technical exercise to see if we can build it. It's very much about, how does this improve your business? And in both cases, you get add to basket rate goes up, AOV goes up, or checkout conversion goes up. These are genuine things. There's one last quick thing I wanted to quickly add, which is the ability. Sometimes I see customers get very excited because they see a new feature on a site, something kind of unusual that's very attention grabbing, brings a lot of customers to the site, and they think, I'd love to do that, but we don't have the money or time to upgrade the whole site so we could add that feature. That's the other area. So you could add a completely new feature. It could be in the buying funnel. It could be outside of the buying funnel. One of our customers built a quiz that allows you to put in a lot of personal details about things you like, so then they can give you more optimization. The whole rest of the site's on Sitegenesis. The quiz is now on composable storefront. So that's another way that you take advantage of that. You could add just a cool feature that delights your customers, brings them to the site, brings more customer loyalty. So long answer, I appreciate it.
No, great.
Yeah.
No, I really appreciate all these details. And actually, this makes more sense in a way that, like, as you just gave an example that one customer started their composable journey by just developing that quiz, you know, and that actually gives you and your customers and even your internal teams, your technical people, your business team, your leadership, a trust on this solution, right? A sense of this, that how this solution works, right? And then you can gradually start moving towards the upper funnel, you know. So that is really, really great. Excellent. Moving towards Foha and Iftikhar, one point with James raised, I think, was about the SEO. So I know that we have one dedicated podcast episode, which we are going to conduct in next couple of weeks' time. But I would like you guys to touch upon this SEO piece, because even in recent past, when we are speaking with prospects or even the existing customers, the main questions which comes, and they start comparing the SEO which is available in Sitegenesis or in Safari, and they compare it with Composable, because Composable is a different model. So they want to know more on how SEO works out of the box when it comes to the Salesforce Composable Commerce as a product.
So personally, it's very accurate. You're absolutely right. So just to be clear, for everyone listening, in case this isn't an area they know, out of the box, both Sitegenesis and SFRA actually have a sort of SEO part of the business manager tool, allowing you to kind of optimize that various things for search engines. Because of the nature, the decoupled nature of the way that we work now with the composable storefront, that doesn't really tie together at the moment. Bluntly, this is a kind of one of the few remaining gaps. We have a gap analysis tool. And I think one of the things about the gap analysis thing is kind of interesting is that obviously a lot of people went composable to use third-party tools. So the gap analysis is very much for people who are just using Salesforce in a headless way, not really composable. Really, they're using all of the services from the back is still Salesforce. And this SEO kind of falls under that one. Obviously, I mean, I think for one thing is that generally we see that SEO is actually improved anyway when you move across to the composable storefront, because you're more mobile optimized, typically faster. One of the reasons you're faster is that we have server-side rendering built in out of the box. Again, outside the scope of this discussion, but generally improves first page loads, improves SEO. But yeah, at the moment, we don't really have the tooling built into it. So often this becomes a function of the developers who are building the pages. We have seen a couple of workarounds on that where people can add their own features to it, or people using third-party tools. Obviously, from a roadmap point of view, eventually this will become something built into it, and we're actually looking at the right way to build it in, I think, is the best way to put it at the moment. Do we build it into our runtime administration tool, for instance, rather than in the business manager? But yeah, no, it's a great question. I wouldn't say we have a direct solution right at this moment, but we have a lot of, you know, we're still working on that one there, but it's a great question, yeah.
Sure. And I think I'll tell the same questions to Iftikhar and Foha, because you've been exploring this SEO piece for past few days. How is your thought on SEO?
Okay. So I think I will take in another way. Like James said, that it's a gap. So, but at the same time, it's very open to the developers itself. So they have all the options for implementing the best practices of the SEO within that PWA kit. So basically, the problem which I studied so far, and I went through all the materials and the things. So regarding to the PWA, the basic problem is the client-side rendering. So when there is a client-side rendering happens, you process the data at the client side. So at that time, maybe the crawler, when come is to crawl the page, maybe they find an empty page, right? There is no content. But the way the Google crawler works, they work in two different steps. The first step to crawl the server side content, which is built from the server side and rendered complete page into the browser side. And at the second wave, it processes the JavaScript as well. The modern crawler do the JavaScript processing. But the problem is that this crawling may take several days indexing the content to the search engine, right? So for this, addressing to this issue, I think the developer need to implement some best practices, the recommendations, so that they can minimize this issue within their implementation. Like, there are several best practices that they can implement. Like, there are best practices regarding to the making the URLs, the more use of the mix use of the server side contents, and instead of loading content within the page, you navigate the users within your site. For example, from PLP to the PDP, you can define the server side rendering partially, and then fill your contents, the complete content, via client-side rendering. So you can choose a mixture of server-side and the client-side to cater this problem, so that when the Google crawler crawl the page the first time, they have some contents to index, which they get from the server-side rendering. So we will cover this thing as a separate podcast in detail, and the more technical detail I will share. So what the best practices the developers should adopt and should implement to minimize this issue. So far, I see this only one issue, the client-side rendering creating a problem for the crawlers. So it takes several days to index.
Okay. In terms of improving the ranking.
Yeah. And apart from this, all good things are there, because the PWA is the mixture of the desktop and the mobile application. So it has the both flavors, and it definitely adds values, and a lot of SEO related improvement are already there in this solution. Yeah.
Foha, your take on this?
Yeah, exactly what Iftikhar said right now and James touched up on. And I think that with time, as we work on this, we can come up with a solution that would stand out from the previous implementations on Safari. Again, it depends on the practices that you're following. It depends on how well your site's performing and how much, because we have server-side rendering that's being ported over here. We have CSR as well. So we can use the combination of both for the server side to get skeletons of HTMLs for crawlers to more easily navigate, and then client side for improving the speed. So a combination of everything. And ultimately, we're pretty hopeful, we're pretty optimistic that we'd be able to come up with a solution for SEO that would stand out. It would result in great SEO results.
Sure, Foha. Thank you. James, before we wrap up, one last question. Any suggestions, any feedbacks for the partners like us, consulting ISV partners, composable partners, how we can improve of what we are already doing, and any feedback, any suggestions would be welcome, please.
No, I mean, look, that's a great question. Thank you. I'm really, really excited, obviously, working with our SI partners. You guys are bringing a lot of value. We can't realize our intent. We have a very strong intent, like I said, to make this as simple, as straightforward for retailers to be able to go composable. And we can't do that without great alignment for our SI. So just the fact that you guys align with our intent and understand what we're trying to achieve and how you fit into that is fantastic. But the rest of this, I would just say, would be a lot around, unless it's an incredibly specific ask from a customer, every time a customer asks for something, consider adding that to your portfolio already. So if you're working with Page Designer or this CMS and they say, we need you to use that CMS, make that an option in future, so that for every future build, that's another CMS you support. And again, I think this, the thing is, listen to what the customers are asking for. If there's an area where the customers say this is really important and it's not built into our product, then that's a great opportunity for you to add extra value again by adding that as a pre-built feature inside your existing accelerator.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we are actually also trying to expand our reach to the other vendors. Like, in terms of expanding our integration stack, we have covered Contentful Amplience, part of our CMS. We have covered Search Algolia. We are into Covio for the search. So we are trying to give more integrations options to the customers so that they can also pick and choose what is best available and best fit for their business requirements as well as in terms of the budget as well.
Which is great. And I guess I do have one last thing to consider then. So this is my thing for yourself and the other partners. Look at what you can do in B2B. That would be another thing. So that's a nice one to consider. It's a rapidly growing marketplace, I would say. So B2C, right? B2C is definitely the bigger one, but composable in B2B is becoming more popular very, very quickly right now. So that would be another area to consider, especially if you can reuse the same or some of the same technology across both. So that would be.
So because you think that is because of the native Lightning platform, which is there within the CRM as well as B2B, it supports the same. You don't need to do any further integrations. The objects are getting shared out of the box. Do you think this could be the reason?
Okay, that's a great question. So we have our own roadmap in terms of the way we're going from like composable B2B. I can't spend so much time going into detail there, but I would say that just now that it's very high for industry reasons, I think that it's an interesting area, and I'm going to just try and do it quickly, but many people think, well, who cares about user experience when it's B2B? It's a job. But if you go back 10, 15, 20 years working in B2B, you had to go to a catalog, look up an obscure SKU, and then you had to be trained to be able to order from a customer.
Yes.
So obviously, as you get better and better and better, that ability to make you so you don't have to get any kind of training to use a customer's interface, it's just like the kind of stuff that people do day-to-day buying online. That means that people are much more likely to work with you as a vendor because they like you. It's easy to work with you. There's no training required. People make fewer mistakes. You're able to do it with things that we typically used to do in B2C. We've been doing in B2C, like when a customer buys this product, maybe this is another useful product they should use. You're buying this technology. Maybe you need these power supplies, or maybe you need these safety features and things like this. So actually, it is more of a B2C-like experience, and yes, B2B vendors are finding that it's worth money to have this kind of thing. It's actually like it's showing business value. So, and of course, the other thing is that a lot of people are doing business on the run. So making sure that your website is optimized for mobile devices, again, isn't really a nice to have. It's essential these days.
Exactly. No, for sure. You're perfectly right. Yeah. All right, James, thank you so much for giving us your time today and being the part of this podcast episode. And we will hopefully will have a few more in the days to come. Thank you so much. Thank you once again. And thank you for being the part of this session.
Absolute pleasure. Great to see you all again. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Iftikhar. Thank you, Fumaha. All right. Take care. Bye.